It's August 19th, 2018. This is Fancy Ramen, episode 80. How's it going, everybody?
It's
good.
Going.
I'm Scott.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Neil.
I'm just trying to roll through with speed since Neil's sacrificing dinner for this one.
Okay,
yeah,
so
my apologies on that.
I'll also apologize if there's like a lot of background noise coming in. They're playing some Mario Kart to my left, and there's a 3D printer to my right.
Are you printing something right now? Is that why you're... Or
yes.
Are you just saying, I have a 3D printer, look at how cool it is?
No.
Yeah,
no,
by the way.
No, I'm literally printing something right now. I probably should have turned around before we started recording to make sure the print didn't fail, but I guess I'll deal with that after this. If it did.
In case
It'll
you can't tell, it's a hectic week because a lot of things are happening. I just got back in town. Cookie's got foreign
Two
exchange
guests.
Students.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott.
No, you good. Scott.
He was doing something.
Yeah.
What games have you guys been playing this week?
So, as I was telling Scott earlier, not much. We played a little bit of Sports Friends. If you don't remember that classic game that's on the PlayStation 4, it's weird as fuck. But we introduced the girls to that, and we also played some... Sushi Go Party. And I got to play for myself Gloomhaven for the first time. We did our first session on Tuesday before the girls came, and oh my goodness, it was both fun, stressful, and long. We all arrived around like 6:30-ish, started playing around 7. No, everyone arrived around 6:30-ish, started playing around 7:30-ish because the setup took like an hour to get everything punched out and in order and organized. But then after we got set up and got rolling, it was a good 3-hour session. Everyone left around midnight.
That sounds like when we tried to play Dark Souls.
Yeah.
That setup time just crushes you.
And sorry, what was the board game called?
Gloomhaven,
okay. Did you talk about this before, or am I misremembering things?
We may have brought it up that we were going to play it sometime, Cookie and I, but we haven't spoken anything about it otherwise.
I think I mentioned it when Lizzie first got it from her birthday, that I was excited to play it and was going to get a group of people together. Finally got that group together. I don't know if one of them's going to bail on me, though, because he left a little bit early and Lizzie took over for the rest of the session for him. Because he has to wake up at like 4 a.m. and we assumed, 10 o'clock
Ouch.
Would be the time that we'd be done playing. But we got done around midnight,
yeah.
So... But no. Mentioned it vaguely. It's like... So the way the game works, it turns a board game into a video game. There's like, as we did our first scenario, we read off the scenario... You get to put a sticker down on the map that's like, the map is blank. Sans like background features. So, there's like a mountain area and there's a town and there's the forest and things. So as we did our first scenario, we got to put a sticker on the map, but actually inside the forest that we are in, there's a little town. So we got to, or it was like a cave or whatever. So we got to put a sticker to reveal more of the map. And then we also unlock like two achievements, which also there's an achievement thing at the top of the map as well, where you put a sticker down as well to say, oh yeah, and these are your achievements. So it turns a board game into a video game. It's nice. Oh no. Did Neil freeze?
He may have frozen. Yeah.
Oh, okay. He
could be very focused on thinking about Gloomhaven. I didn't realize they also have a... they're going to make this available on Steam, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what you were talking about for...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you were talking about it popping up for Tabletop Simulator, if they were actually going to make a digital version. This looks really cool.
There probably is a digital version on Tabletop Simulator already. No, I was talking about the Steam one.
Yeah, but exactly. A client that's developed specifically for one game, I normally assume is going to operate better than one that's adapted for Tabletop Simulator.
Yes.
I'm just sad you can't flip the table. That's all.
Well, it doesn't matter because I couldn't really flip the table in VR anyway.
I've been really excited to hear that you just started playing Sushi Go Party because I just picked up that board game actually a couple days ago for me to play with my family. We get together on Sundays normally around this time to eat dinner and microwave a lot. but we also like to play a board game afterward. And so I've picked up this game, and I think it may be one of my new favorite card games. I played the original Sushi Go quite a while ago, but I really am excited to be playing this like larger group format with essentially getting to set up your menu instead of the original card deck. Do you have any... I guess for our listeners, Sushi Go, if they haven't played it, is a game in which you're trading hands every round to try and put together like the ultimate plate of sushi. Each item that you select out of the hand of cards has a different way of earning points.
Mm-hmm.
And using these different frameworks as you shuffle hands around, you end up with both having to coordinate and prepare to score points as you trade your hand around the table, as well as play defensively to stop other players from earning points. And it makes for this very fun game of card grabbing that is like trying to pull sushi away from your friends on a conveyor belt at a conveyor sushi place.
And I will also say it's nice that this game is only $20 right now on Amazon. Because when me and Lizzie picked it up, we found it for $30.
Mm-hmm.
But the going rate that it was going at that time was around $150.
Holy shit.
Because there were no Sushi Go parties around.
Yeah, just so many people were picking up copies. That's
Amazon
pretty wild.
Was out. Yeah.
I found it for $23 at some local store around here, and it same thing. I saw that prices when I went to buy it quite a while ago were just higher than I really wanted to pay. Mm-hmm. So I lucked out in finding a physical copy already out here. You know, we actually just got computers here in Missoula. So to get a board game with like color and laminated cards is still a really, like, really choice option.
But yeah, no. Sushi Go Party is always a fun game to play. Me and Lizzie don't get to play it very often.
Because you need quite a few people to do it.
Yeah.
I've seen that the original Sushi Go game, it can be played with two people, but it just seems a little like it seems a little difficult to do that just because there are some cards that it doesn't make as much sense to only have two. Like Maki rolls, the first two people with the highest number of Maki rolls get points, but if there's only two people, then it's like there isn't the risk of being the third person with the least amount of Maki rolls and wasting turns not being able to get them. So it's like I don't see how it can be a really fun two-person card game, but even once you add three people, I think it's just a total blast. And it's a very lighthearted way to like mess with your friends, as opposed to games like Munchkin, where you have to sometimes just
physically
be a royal asshole.
Fuck them over. It's like, oh, you're 2 points away from winning. I guess everyone's about to throw all the shit on you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, this person's going to level up and win at this point. All right, what you guys got?
Yeah. Right, it is fun to see a whole table assemble an assault on anybody who tries to win.
Before
it's like
that
allegiances
point,
only go
like,
so far.
Oh yeah, no, we'll be friendly to everyone, not adding anything to monsters. They're level 19. Fuck them up.
If we want to roll forward into any video games that we've played, I have to admit, I went camping and went to a concert with most of my free time this weekend and prior to that with work. Didn't do a huge amount of video game playing, but I got to grind some more hours into Octopath Traveler, which is just, it continues to be a delight. I still haven't lost kind of my zeal for how much I'm enjoying that game. The only thing that's changing is I'm becoming more and more sensitive to like the weird pixel warping that Neil brought up. Now I'm like staring at it as it happens every time I play. But besides that, the boss battles are all really fun. I love that they really incentivize you to use different approaches depending on the boss. And I really like that even if I'm fighting a boss and I win on the first try, like I'm putting in a lot of work and getting some lucky breaks normally to get through that. And if I'm not beating them the first time, then I'm coming back in and not just blindly trying again, but, you know, really being given experience from that first fight to build a more competent strategy. I really like games like that, that essentially aren't going to pull any punches for you, but are very demonstrative that certain techniques or approaches are probably going to be more effective than others.
I have, besides the thing, as I mentioned, I downloaded Pokemon Go.
Oh, you were in Pokemon Go originally, right? Like, it's it's been on your phone, taken off, and then replaced by Magikarp Jump, the best game we've played this year. And then
I forgot about that game.
And then you added Pokemon Go to it.
Yeah, so I'm back into Pokemon Go. I unfortunately can't recover all the shit I did before, which makes me sad, but not like too sad. Because I've recovered the user ID, I've recovered my password, but every time I try to log into the actual app, it says unable to connect or try again later. But if I like just do like my Facebook one that I created when I re-downloaded everything, lets me into that one like immediately. I can log into the full Pokemon Go website with my user ID login, my old stuff, and see everything, but I just can't do it on the app, and it's sad.
So did you, given the opportunity, would you change what team you select from the beginning between like blue, red, and yellow?
Well, first of all, anyone who chose team, oh God, what was it? Was it? Fuck it. Anyone who didn't choose Team Mystic is a fucking scrub. Team Mystic?
They were blue, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Still the blue team. Then Team Valor was the red one, which was the other like big team. And then I guess it's Team Instinct that everyone was like, yeah, they exist. Those were like the cool kids that were like, oh, we're cool because we don't have many people and we're a tight-knit community, blah, blah, blah. Nah, they were fucking losers and they know it.
Well, don't go back and listen to what team I was on when that started out.
Oh, God. Were you Team Instinct?
Team Instinct, yeah.
Yep, you would. You would, noob. Get good, scrub. So if you download Pokemon Go again, would you change? Or would you just stick it out still?
Now, you know, I think I would have said I'd stick with my team until I just heard your until you shredded my party. I think I've got to double down then. I gotta resurrect Team Instinct's reputation.
Yep, Team Instinct. That other choice that no one actually chose.
I mean, when you actually have it.
When you have to go against, it's like, oh, what colors do you choose? Do you choose the red color, the blue color, or the yellow color?
Well, my first Pokemon game was Pokemon Yellow, so it made sense to me.
I was actually going to be Team Valor, but then Lizzie went Team Mystic because she hates the color red, so I just wanted to stick with her.
I chose the best team because my wife picked it.
Yep, pretty much. Yeah. Happens.
Neil's not getting in on this. He never played Pokemon Go, right?
Yep, never played it.
Did Tiff?
Yes, she did it.
Okay. So now what have you been playing?
Well, now that I'm alive again and
finished that
being
taco.
Microwaved out. That's, I don't know what you're talking about. What taco? What tacos, I should say. So I was out of town, but I did play a few games, and I will note I was actually beating the Starseer shrine quest in my descent to Omaha. So that was fun. Now,
did you beat it?
Yeah. I actually didn't have to do a second try on that boss. I think since I was
what
taking
job
the
do you get for that?
Starseer or something like that. But since I had taken the same four characters for each of those four advanced jobs or shrines, I think by that my last one there, Starseer, I had just gotten strong enough that like it afforded me to use the strategy I was using for the other ones blindly at this point without having any possibility of losing. But I played three different games that I think are all fairly interesting. What is
pick
this?
Pick me. Huh? Pick me. I have a question real quick.
Okay,
pick me.
Go ahead.
I have a phone.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
You forgot okay. the question, didn't you?
No, that's totally it. I was just celebrating the continuation of Classroom Bias. so I feel like I didn't understand your technique at using Bewildering Grace to get extra like JP and XP boosts,
mm-hmm.
because it seems like every time I use that move, and you better believe that when I use it, I always make sure it's on the four times applied effects.
Right.
I normally get like the ground explodes beneath me three times, and then my dancer loses all of her mana or SP on the fourth turn, and I don't understand how it's working out for you better. Do I need to be in dire straits to use this to my advantage?
No,
or am I just like really rolling like shit on this?
I first want to defend my bias. Since I have my notes open on my OBS screen right now, Cookie's face is being blocked out, so I did not realize he had a question first. But to
sure.
answer your question,
I'll take it.
To answer your question, what I typically do when I'm grinding like that is, well, like if I'm legitimately in a position, like on a boss that I know I can steamroll or I'm not too concerned about killing me, and I really want to dance it out, I always have a merchant on my team to donate BP. So I'm constantly throwing the merchant
Bewildering
BP
Grace.
Into the dancer. And the dancer, 9 times out of 10, is going to either be Tyrion or, well, Primrose, but Primrose will have the thief subclass, so they can always recover their own SP just by stealing it back
SP
themselves.
SP steal?
Yep.
Okay.
So okay. as a result, like since I'm using it or trying to use it like every battle, I'm not worried about. The idea is that I can maybe get two full bewildering graces or two full charges. And do I always get a modifier or a multiplier? No, but because I'm using it so often, I tend to get it like every couple battles or so.
I tried it in a couple boss fights and like turn the tide against myself in those boss fights, and so
yeah, there's,
I was like,
there,
I don't think I'm understanding this strategy.
You if you're gonna do it in a boss fight, you have to understand like the worst repercussion would be you get wiped, and the second worst repercussion is that the boss gets healed up entirely.
Yeah. Which I did do that. I did get a boss at about halfway and then just restored all that health. That was a long fight. That was a really long fight.
It's too bad that like experience in JP isn't tracked by like the amount of damage you commit or do. Instead, it's just a fixed stat. But that's That's like most RPGs, with a few exceptions like Fire Emblem.
Yeah.
No, but the... Oh, and Cookie, what was your question?
I didn't have one.
Oh.
He was just fucking with me. He was just being the class clown.
So three new games. The first one is called Orwell. It is free. It might not be free anymore on Humble Bundle. I messaged you guys in Slack just to let you guys know that this game was free. But it's basically Big Brother Simulator, where you are working as an analyst or an investigator to the system known as Orwell. And your job is to basically track social media, websites, text messages, phone conversations of possible like criminals slash terrorists. And you, as the investigator, is supposed to pass data along to the analyzer or like this other character who then takes the data you present and then acts upon it. It's interesting in its concept, but like it maybe doesn't do the best job of like nailing home the point that you, as the investigator, despite like the introduction stating otherwise, you are the one that actually sees everything, whereas the person you're working with doesn't actually have the same access. So let's say like if two pieces of information come up, and it quite literally is, if someone just said that, like, man, I hate the color red. Just kidding. I love red. Then you could actually push forward the information that this person hates the color red, despite the fact that in the context of the sentence he just had, he actually doesn't like the color red. So there's like a level of falsifying evidence that you can actually use to your advantage, or like technically to
frame people
to your disadvantage, I guess. Like, should you accidentally give a person the benefit of the doubt and it turns out they're actually a pretty bad person, or vice versa. It's an episodic game or a season-based game. I think it does release episodically, but season one has been out for a while and season two just came out. Season one was what was free on Humble Bundle, if it still is available. It's an interesting thing that you guys might enjoy. It definitely has a couple twists that may not necessarily feel all that great, but they are unexpected nonetheless. But enough of Orwell. This next game I played is called 80 Days, and it's a steampunk alternate telling of Passepartout, I think is his name, and Phileas Fogg's gamble to try and go around the world in 80 days. Around the World in 80 Days, the novel slash movie or whatever else it is at this point. It's actually pretty fun. It's a mostly text-driven, map-driven game where you more or less need to plot out your course or your journey. A lot of small little events happen. Really, it's not the mechanic itself that makes the game fun, but more like the weird events and narrative things that can happen. Like on my way
to... How weird
to,
are we talking?
Well, okay, so because it's like a steampunk alternate universe, on my way to, I think I was going to Berlin to sell a few things to, you know, you can buy things in one city and sell them in another to get money. And I had like a really expensive, or I had like a wine that was going to net me a few thousand pounds. On my way to Berlin, some sky pirates ended up coming down and picking up our steam carriage and then took us to Prague. When I was on my way to, I can't remember where, it was someplace in the Middle East, we ended up going into a pyramid where our trip got sabotaged by a mad scientist who ended up teleporting us all the way across into someplace in Russia. A bunch of just weird shit like that.
Yeah.
And I missed my 80-day deadline by 2 days. It was pretty sad, but it was a fun experience all around. As I know I've talked about before, I love the game Valhalla, which is about bartending, or anime waifu bartending, as it's put. And I was checking their Twitter feed to see if they had made anything else, because aside from an April Fool's game they made this year, All we know is that they're working on a new project. In the process, I came across a game called Coffee Talk, which was just retweeted by the company, and it's basically that. It's a barista, I guess you could say, game where you interact with characters, and it seems like, at least as they point out, you are essentially using the drinks that you create for customers as like your narrative choices.
So a little bit of Red Strings Club in there?
Yeah. Although like Red Strings Club does, I think, a much better... Well, I'm going to tackle this, I guess, because Red Strings Club and Valhalla, I think, do this type of game a little more justice, despite Red Strings Club maybe not focusing as much on the bartending as I wish it kind of had.
Yeah.
So the game takes place in alternate 2020 Seattle, where there are elves, dwarves, orcs, and other creatures. It's kind of like a weird cross of like it's modern, but there's a bunch of fantasy races involved. And
right, Seattle was originally constructed as a city that was not open to dwarves, and so they have some dwarf negative sentiments at this point, right?
Scott froze.
Did you die, Scott?
Someone's microwaving at Scott's house. Scott's room now.
All right, until we get Scott back, it's like this weird alternate American history. Oh, Scott, you're back. So,
hi. You're making what I assume was a joke, since Neil's face was very quizzical. Then you stopped.
Oh yeah.
Then you froze.
Yeah, I probably stopped mid joke. So let's just roll.
The idea is basically that like all of these different races, they may or may not end up like representing like ethnicities in human history. I'm not really sure, but it seems like they're trying to put some importance, like apparently orcs were the race that like revolutionized like automobile construction and shit like that. A few other key differences, like you name your main character, which the default name comes off as barista, and all you know is that like you're apparently just well enough off, that you don't actually need to worry about profit, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of like charging mechanic, unlike Valhalla. Whereas Red Strings Club, technically you are charging for your drinks. Whether or not the customers know about it, you're charging them in terms of information. The only other thing is that, so apparently in Seattle 2020, it's very uncommon for coffee shops to be open at night. So your coffee shop is strangely one that is only open late at night and not
That's
open
how
during the day.
You drum up that bougie business.
Which is like funny because I feel like Seattle's probably the place where we have the most late night coffee shops to begin with. But whatever, it doesn't matter. The core mechanic behind crafting your drinks is that your recipes are three separate things: base, primary, and secondary ingredients. And you can't make a drink without having the ingredients in each slot. Your base components start off as coffee, matcha, tea, and cocoa. And then you have other ingredients like milk, ginger, mint, lemon, honey, and cinnamon. There might be more that come in because the character alludes to like not having all of their ingredients at the start of day one. Oh, and this, by the way, is a demo. I don't know if I stated that. So there might be more stuff in the actual release. So in Valhalla, and Red Strings Club to an extent, also kind of has this problem, but you're technically never making named drinks. You're just mixing, okay, I'm mixing some vodka and now I'm mixing some rum in, and it's just whatever, and there's not really anything implied by it. You're just playing with people's emotions. Yeah. In Valhalla, everything's fictional, so it's like, okay, these are a bunch of chemical names that don't mean anything, so it doesn't matter what I actually do. It doesn't matter what these drinks are, because the majority of them are fake anyways. In Coffee Talk, I realized immediately how fucking annoyed I was when a customer asked for hot chocolate. So I proceeded to use milk as the core ingredient, because that is the most prominent thing in hot chocolate, correct? But by choosing milk, I could no longer choose any of the other base components. So I couldn't put cocoa in. So I'm like, okay, time to reset. Let's start with cocoa and do milk and milk.
Was it water?
At that point, cocoa, which is just cocoa powder, assumedly, I don't know. And milk and milk, which, because that made sense to me, was milk cocoa. It's like, okay, I guess that's hot chocolate, right?
No, that's milk cocoa. That's not hot chocolate.
That's chocolate milk.
But it's in like a coffee cup, so assumedly it's hot. So hot chocolate milk is hot cocoa, right?
Neil, I've put cold water in a coffee cup before. The coffee cup doesn't make it hot.
So where I'm going with this is that, like, at this point in time, this drink should be like hot chocolate, basically. Milkier hot chocolate, sure, whatever, doesn't matter. When I give it to the character, she's like, oh, this isn't chocolate. And then my barista character basically notes that, oh, I must have messed up. It's like, okay, great. Let's try again. I try cocoa, milk. It's still milk, cocoa. I take a step back. I do cocoa, cocoa, cocoa. So if I'm using cocoa powder, and cocoa powder, what am I supposed to get?
I mean, you should get cocoa powder in a cup.
Oh. I'm going for hot chocolate. You get hot chocolate with that.
I get hot chocolate.
That's bad.
Dumb. See, I think the issue here is just that, if there's not some sort of tutorial or instructional format for you to figure out how to make these drinks, and they're just expecting you to kind of guess what it takes to make them, it is a little weird that they can essentially do it based off of what they think the combination is, when obviously they don't know how to make hot chocolate if they're not adding some milk to it, right?
Right.
And I was worried from the start. Yeah, I was worried from the start that they were going to be like, it's hot water and cocoa mix. You like open up the cabinet and there's some like low fat Swiss Miss under there, and that's what you got to scoop in. It's like, well, okay, this is a real fancy coffee shop I find myself in.
And maybe that's what it is. Like, there's another character that in their social media says they like, or it's actually the same character. And their social media profile says they like mocha lattes or chocolate lattes or something like that. And I'm like, okay, I know she asked for hot chocolate. I'm curious if I can make this and if it would change anything. Problem. As soon as I add cocoa or coffee as my primary ingredient, which coffee milk is a cappuccino. And I think coffee milk is a latte. So I was going to do coffee milk cocoa. Well, because cocoa and coffee are base ingredients, I can't use them together. So I was just infuriated by the fact that you couldn't even fucking make the drink that their profile said you needed or that they wanted or liked,
did you,
I guess.
Did you try coffee?
That was espresso. I mean, yeah, apparently, like, you don't need to have a special roast for your espresso anymore. You just throw three times the amount of coffee.
These guys are developers. They've probably never done a barista job in their life. This is why we need more diverse video game staffs. You at least need a barista if you're going to make a game about being a barista.
Correct.
I'm sure you could hire one for a very cheap consulting fee, and or go to your literally go to your local coffee shop and ask a couple basic questions.
And so maybe
how do you
that's
make hot chocolate?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, we take this cocoa powder. We also take this other cocoa powder and this third cocoa powder. See, let me combine them all together for you. Here's your hot chocolate.
the only thing that's wrong about Cookie's like anecdotal situation there, or not anecdotal, but hypothetical situation, is that the barista would actually look at you and be like, are you a fucking idiot? And they probably wouldn't say anything.
So to top this all off, like, maybe my biggest issue about this game is behind, like, the plot itself. First and foremost, like, Valhalla and Red Strings Club both have, like, motivation immediately given to you.
Absolutely.
We won't need to go into Red Strings Club, but Valhalla, like, while it's a lot more lighthearted, immediately in the first day of play, Jill, like, one of her coworkers is like, hey, what the heck's wrong? You seem out of it. And she's like, well, I have rent to pay, and your wallet says you have $0. So it's like, okay, so already I know I'm incentivized that I need to serve drinks well to get more money so I can pay my rent. And that's like a mechanic. But in this game, you already know immediately off the bat that you don't care about money. You don't need to worry about profit. So what's the point of me giving drinks to anyone or doing
green, sweet green hair booty? That's what you want. Sweet green hair booty.
And speaking of sweet green haired booty, her character is that she is a writer working on becoming a fictional writer. She otherwise works for like a newspaper, Seattle newspaper or something. And she
do you think that she writes about humans in her fictional writing? Or is she a human?
Yeah, she's a human. And like the end of the demo is literally her being like, I've decided what I'm going to write my book about. It's going to be about this coffee shop.
Oh, no.
And to top it all off, though, like, is just the fact that her character is literally the fiction author or striving fiction author that can only write late at night in a coffee shop.
That's the only place I can write my fan fiction. I mean,
it's a tried and true trope.
We
know it works because everybody tells that story.
It's so fucking cliche that like I just can't. I don't know. I'm gonna probably end up playing it because again, like it's a demo. It's a fun enough mechanic. It's interesting to me, but like
I'm gonna play it.
But those were the games I played.
And before we go, I guess I attempted to play Dishonored 2.
Yeah,
on several occasions.
I didn't get the feedback if you were having the resolution issue I asked about.
Oh, your message was really cryptic.
Sorry, yes, no. I tried to turn Dishonored 2 on. It took up 1/4 of my screen. So I was like, okay, what's the screen resolution for a 4K monitor? And I was like, okay, sweet. So then I put it to the correct resolution. It took up the entire screen, and that was great. It would fully load in. And then the screen would just go black. And then after that, it'd be like, my thing would be like, oh, there's no inputs anymore. So the TV's going to go to sleep in like 2 minutes.
That's too bad. I was hoping that just being able to get into the screen and adjust the resolution was going to help you out. Because I had the same issue, but I don't have a 4K screen. I just go up to 1080p.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, 1080p is too small. It's just part of the screen, and I'm like, I can't just be looking up in the top left hand corner this entire time.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. It's too bad. It's a gorgeous game too. Like I love that particular series because it's like an oil painting.
I'll continue to fuck with it.
And see,
but yeah,
as
you should
right now.
When you said you had a resolution issue, I thought you were referring to your New Year's resolution, and you're like, I'm never going to finish this game.
Oh my God.
No, that Cookie quit that resolution in January 2018. We didn't even make it to the end of the month. It was like January 22nd. He's like, okay, guys, it was fun. I tried.
Oh yeah, because my New Year's resolution was to like beat a game every month that came for free that I got. Yeah.
Yeah.
I beat one of the games. No, I didn't even.
You were
beat
really
one of the
close.
Games.
You said you
I
were
was
on
really
the way
close.
To beating it.
Yeah.
And the next time we recorded, you were like, "Nah,
I'm over
I quit."
Yeah, because I was playing the Batman Telltale game, season 1, and I got through I think I have like one episode left, but I was over it.
I thought that was probably one of the better Telltale games that have come out in the last few years, since whenever, technically.
I know, but it's just like, I had to keep playing it, and that doesn't jive with me. You know, I go till I get my enjoyment out of a game, then it's dead to me again. So we'll see what happens with Octopath Traveler. I haven't picked that up in a while. Should probably play that.
It's easy to get back into, which is nice. I actually realized that with my whole run of not playing video games very much recently, I went back to play Octopath Traveler and apparently had my Switch on sleep for like a week and a half to 2 weeks, and I turned it on. I was still in the middle of a fight. I'm like, holy shit, I put this down hard.
How do you put it down in the middle of a fight?
There was something I had to run and do, and then I forgot for the rest of time. But yeah, it's always
you.
A fun surprise to come back to being in the middle of something weeks later.
Fair enough. Yep. Is it still raining, Neil?
I don't have a window, so I can't tell you.
Well, we tried.
Comments, questions, all that stuff can go to podcast@fancyramen.com.
And tell your friends about the podcast. Bye.